welcome everyone to the latest episode of the Here's Johnny podcast. I am your host, Larry.
And I am your other host, Justin.
So this week, it is my week to do a discussion episode. You will not have funny parody music. You will not have bodily humor. Just like Justin made the episode his own, I'm kind of making it my own. So mine's a little bit dark and heavy.
That's okay. Not everybody wants to hear about everybody's butthole. I get it.
Yes. And Justin, you said you have a couple of quick game notes you want to talk about. So this is probably going to be a longer one. Just looking at my outline. So I guess we'll kind of keep it moving. I will go first on what's been new with me.
Okay.
Movie and TV wise, I have been slacking. I've barely watched anything outside of like the news every evening. But Devin and I are going to watch Willy's Wonderland tomorrow night.
Oh, we are actually going to save it for Valentine's Day. That's going to be our Valentine's Day movie.
Lovely. Yeah. We would have watched it tonight, but Devin has to work tomorrow because of tax season. So
fair enough. Yeah,
that's she has to go in. Book wise, I am on book 2 of the Inheritance Cycle, the audiobook stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Still reading the Christopher Pliny book, but kind of been slow there. But games. I have been revitalized, and I don't even know what happened. So last week, I think, one of our patrons, the one who forced on Rampage on us, actually, Ginger Thrust, he was playing Resident Evil 0 on stream. And watching him play it, I kind of like wow,
You missed
Village horror? Is coming. Village is coming.
Oh, okay, yeah, that too.
And I was like, well, I haven't played Resident Evil 2 since 2019, since the year it came out.
Damn.
And so I was like, I'm getting the platinum. And I can confirm that as of today, I have the platinum in Resident Evil 2 Remake.
Well, that's amazing. Are you going to go for 3?
Yes, but I learned my lesson from the Resident Evil season and also just talking to Marcus. I want to spread it out. So my next like side non-podcast related game project is Kingdom Hearts.
Okay.
On paper, I thought it wouldn't be bad. I logged in today. There are a couple trophies that make me want to vomit just thinking about them. Do you want to guess what they are?
I'm going to say one is maybe beat it on hard mode or whatever the
night. Yeah, but that's just attrition. That's just
yeah. Embracing one is going to be synthesize every item in Kingdom Hearts 1, which I know 30. The item that is hard to get is in Traverse Town, kind of after you. It's like one of the enemies that like they disappear after like 3 sets. You have to basically kill them in the first combo.
Yep, that is one of the trophies that makes me uncomfortable. And there's like trophies tied to that, right? So like Ultimate Weapon, Donald and Goofy's stuff, like it's tied to the synthesizing. So that's going to suck.
And a lot of grinding, I'm assuming.
Yes, but there's actually one more that makes me very, very stressed.
Which Kingdom Hearts is it in?
I'm just doing Kingdom Hearts Final Mix, the original.
Okay. Because I was going to say maybe the Gummy Ship stuff.
That's going to suck, but I think if I find a YouTube video and just build like an ultimate beast, I'm not that concerned about that. No. I have to beat that fucking game without ever using a continue.
Oh, that's easy, man. Just put it on fucking easy and coast your way through.
I
don't
think there is an easy mode. I think it's just normal or proud.
But depending on like your answers, right, it kind of makes it easier towards the start.
I'm going to look into it, but it's no continue, and there's one other one with it. It's like a similar, like, I forget what it is top of my head. I was looking at it today.
I think I might have that trophy, actually.
So there's like two side by side in the PlayStation menu. Like one is no continues, and then the other one is something very similar to like the no continue. That's gonna drive me crazy.
Kingdom. Sorry, I'm on PSN profiles here.
I want to find it because now it's driving me nuts.
I'm just looking at it here. Clear the game without changing your equipment.
That one. Thank you. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, because I do have clear the game without using a continue. August 9th.
Sweaty boy.
August 9th, 2018 at 11:31 p.m. I don't have the without changing your equipment because that one,
that's why I'm hoping you're right and there actually is a easy mode.
there has to be.
I'm pretty god there is.
There has to be, because there has to be. Although you have to do all like the what's the like super boss in that game? There's not Sephiroth.
There's Sephiroth. There's and the then, one at Clock Tower, the Phantom. There's the one in Agrabah.
There's the extra one that's only in Final Mix.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. There's outside of Sephiroth.
Hollow Bastion, I think.
Yes, the mysterious stranger in Hollow Bastion. Yes.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, it's not going to be fun. I'm sorry.
No, and the thing is, I was on a high, and I logged in, and I started looking at it, and I just started thinking. But what happened was, I heard "Dearly Beloved" on a playlist,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, "Oh, Kingdom Hearts."
Yeah, why don't you play rhythm game that came out, Chain of Memory Melodies or whatever?
No. Moving on, this week, it's just, like I said, the game stuff has got me kind of stressed. Yeah. Dead by Daylight's new tome came out. Mm-hmm. They're a seasonal thing.
Okay.
May have already completed level one.
Well, that's good. I mean, I know you guys like to play lots of Dead by Daylight. So.
Yeah, I haven't had any problem with there's a new user interface. I haven't had any problems with that. The hitboxes right now are a little bit broken. Remember Are You Afraid of the Dark, the one commercial where the clown reaches his arm out through the TV and keeps... that's pretty much every single killer. It feels like you're getting hit from across the map.
So, I mean, I don't... Obviously, I haven't played Dead by Daylight in a while, but it seems like every time there's a major update, there's something
I've wrong. Read a theory about it, and apparently what the problem people believe is that this game was made with really shitty code because they didn't expect it to turn into what it is.
Yeah.
And instead of going back and fixing the code, they just keep building on top of the really shitty code. So something like changing the UI has these unexpected consequences because the base code is so fucked, but they don't want to go back and change it because that time that it would take to do that, they wouldn't be making any money.
Yeah. Huh.
Or so I've read. I mean, it's not unplayable, but it's definitely when you're getting hit through a window, like 3 feet after clearing the window, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Destiny 2's new season came out, so I'm working on my grind on that. Luckily, no new raid, so that's a little bit less stressful.
Oh, that's good.
So it's just a seasonal thing, which is nice. And then two big notes for the podcast. You and I have got to put a schedule together, and we have got to stream at least one time a week. Both.
Yes.
We got affiliate and we have been slacking. But I will not be playing Silent Hill Origins on stream.
Yeah, the thing is I mean, you own it, so I don't actually care talking about it, and I hope you're okay with that. But yeah, for some reason apparently you showed the copy that you own on stream, everything. You own the game. You were just trying to play it in a way that people can watch. Yeah. And it kind of sucks that it's broken.
It made me really uncomfortable too, because I'm not an emulator. I buy expensive games for a one-time playthrough.
Yeah.
And they just sit on my shelf and collect dust, but they're still cool to look at. But it made me uncomfortable, and it kind of threw me off of my rhythm. So I pulled out the PSP. It still works. So I'll be playing Silent Hill Origins that way. But we'll be playing Final Fantasy X. So
okay. Yeah, I think stream. I'm going but to. We I'll try the.
At least a night a week to stream each.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to try to do the PSP on stream, like the emulation.
Yeah. Whitney and Jake have both said it works.
Yeah. So I'll try
it. You might feel like you need to it might be a little bit difficult, but they said it's pushed through and it'll be fine. Unlike the PS2 version, which was just trash.
Yeah. The flashlight doesn't render properly or some shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to see that, go check my stream out. You can see that happen live and watch me start freaking out. But that's all that I have. So sorry, that was a lot. But like I said, I've been playing games, which is interesting. And I won't lie, the Raccoon City Native Platinum Trophy, it feels nice. And that game is just... Because especially after Dark Souls, when I was questioning how good of a gamer, quote unquote gamer, I am, fuck that.
Don't worry.
I know, but going back and playing Resi 2, doing decent on hard mode, clearing Force Survivor, almost beating it with Tofu, I'm not bad. It's just Dark Souls is a different kind of beast.
Yeah.
That's what I got. Justin, your floor.
Okay. I have actually also been up to a ton of gaming. So I'll start off lightly. I haven't really watched anything. I've actually been playing like a lot of video games. I started playing The Division 2. Channeling each other then, huh? What's that?
We were channeling each other without even knowing it.
Yeah. I started playing The Division 2 again.
Why?
For the Raccoon City items.
Okay, okay. I hated that game when I played it with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I played it for a night. I think I might keep playing it. I don't know. I'm actually starting to like kind of enjoy it now.
You should talk an ace. There are some people who still
play that game. I know. Hey, I didn't say I was playing it alone.
Who are you playing with?
Mostly Tuck right now.
You're dragging Tuck back into it.
I was like, oh yeah, I kind of want to, like, I'm thinking about getting back into it because I want those Resident Evil things. She was like, I'll drag you through it. All right, cool.
That's awesome.
So,
okay.
And then I'm still playing.
Oh, we've been playing with Tuck and Rachel too in the forest.
Oh yeah. We started playing the forest this week. I am in the final month of Persona 5. So far I've put 60 hours into this platinum.
Final month.
So I probably have like 10 more hours to go and then I'll be done and I'll have the platinum.
Is it like time to like months? Like you can't get certain trophies outside like waiting like a month?
Well, I just have clearing the final dungeon basically.
And you mean time wise, not like you have to wait like a real world month.
Oh God, no. So okay. The game takes place like,
I know it's a real life like high school simulation. That's why I didn't know if like you had to actually wait like certain amount of time for like prom or some shit.
No. Getting through that, I felt a little really nostalgic, so I went back and played and beat Star Fox for the Super Nintendo.
Fun.
And I started a Nuzlocke run in Pokemon Blue.
Fun. Where are you at?
I literally started yesterday. Just beat Brock. So
I'm guessing that you started with Squirtle or Bulbasaur.
So I started with Squirtle. I actually hands down, like, because I'm playing on my 3DS.
Yeah.
And so I have never gotten this lucky before. The first random encounter I got into in Viridian Forest was Pikachu. So I'm fucking lucky. Set.
Did you go to where you fight your rival like, on the way to Victory Road, like off to the west of Viridian? You can get a Nidoran male or female there, or if you're playing blue, you can also get a Mankey. I would highly recommend going and get one of those three.
Okay.
In Nuzlocke, it's a different area, so you're allowed to go there. It's a catch. Yeah. And they can learn a lot of TMs. Nidoking, in particular, like when people do speedruns, Nidoking is the Pokemon they use for speedruns because it can learn a bunch of HMs. Hmm. So if you're doing a Nuzlocke, it might be worth your time to go back and just try to get a Nidoran or even a Mankey just to have that.
Yeah, I might do that, actually.
And you got to grind anyway in a Nuzlocke, but that's awesome. I think Nuzlockes are a lot of fun. And you are nicknaming them, right?
Oh, yeah. I can't say any of the names here.
You're supposed to name them things that when they die, it feels sad. Like, I always name them after my dogs and stuff.
Oh, no. I wish I had my 3DS on me. It's actually charging upstairs. Okay. But I'll bring the names next week. They're just... Most of them, the ones I know I'm not going to use, I'm just like, yeah, this is like fuck face.
You're supposed to name them things so if they die, it hurts. The whole idea is that hurts.
I'm going to be sad if my Pidgey nicknamed fuckboy dies, okay?
All right. You said you had two things you wanted to share with us, right?
Yes. I'm trying to think. Is that... I started playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
So she was playing with you last night instead of playing Deeds with us.
and we also... because she dragged me in. Well, dragged me. She asked if I wanted to play with...
Joe?
Noah and somebody else. I don't remember. I don't remember their names. This is the first time I played with them. But, you know, it was... It brought back a lot of, like, I used to play Call of Duty a lot, and it really brought that back out in me. I got really fucking sweaty. Not in, like, Destiny a bad way. Destiny
is the only shooter I've ever played and enjoyed. Halo with friends, but never online or anything.
Oh, it was bad. It was fun, but really bad. And then, finally, okay, so a couple weeks ago, I was actually given a code to Yeez 9, the Monster Nox. One of the
RPG franchises that I've always wanted to play and never have.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. If you have not played it, I think you might enjoy it. So I'm not that far into it. But it plays a lot like an action RPG, kind of like a looser Kingdom Hearts.
Okay.
Kind of. If you ever played like Tales of Vesperia, kind of those games.
I have tried, and my good friend Matt something, he wants me to play Tales of Vesperia so badly. I actually own it on Steam. He wants me to play it so bad.
The combat system is kind of like that. The combat system, I'm going to say, is hands down what to go to this game for.
Anime.
Oh, it's anime
discussion
as fuck.
For like 4 hours before you even like move on from a city.
No, so this one is based in a city, but it actually starts you like in media res, kind of like it just kind of throws you into shit, which is really nice.
Yeah,
but the story is very so far very tropey.
Sure. Okay.
But the combat is fun as hell. But I'll probably talk about it more when I beat it. But it's a long ass game, and I've been playing it. And the last thing I want to talk about is a game that I think, Larry, interests you a lot. So, thanks to Sean over at Terminals, he was gracious enough to give me a key for Green Hell.
I have been playing Green Hell. Mr. Mad Vlad play that game before.
It is fun as hell.
Watching Mad Vlad play it, I can imagine it would be.
Yeah, especially if you like the forest. Like I know it's either coming to consoles or already out on consoles. I don't really remember.
Green Hell?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I honestly cannot remember if it's coming to consoles or already out on consoles. But, oh yeah, console editions. Creepy Jar is renewing their commitment to seeing Green Hell on PS4 and Xbox One. So it is supposed, I mean, this press release was from like April 30th last year that it's supposed to be coming this year. So, I mean, it might have got pushed to this year, but either way, it's coming out on consoles. Specifically, what I was given a key for was the Spirits of the Amazon, which is like a prequel to Green Hell.
I've seen a little bit about it, yeah.
So basically, I mean, really, if you like Green Hell, you'll like the Spirits of Amazon. It's basically just more of that set.
Describe for people who don't know, because I know exactly what you're talking about. What kind of game is Green Hell?
I mean, it's a survival simulator, basically. So you're kind of in this forest. I don't want to get into like any detail about the story because
that's
it
fine.
Is
but
very
it's gameplay. Yeah. Gameplay, because it is different than the forest.
Yes, it's like really in depth about like how you have to heal yourself. If you like fall too far, you can like cut yourself and break bones. And like
the hunting
you have to hunt
in depth too, which is incredible.
Yeah, I just think like if you like games like The Forest and like other survival simulators, I think you'll love this game.
Especially if you play The Forest and like you wish there was more. I love The Forest. Like it's one of our top games on this podcast. But if you wish there was like a more in-depth system, so like if you like Destiny, but you wish there was like a more in-depth system, and you play Division 2.
Yeah.
If you like The Forest, you want a more in-depth system. That's Green Hell.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that when Green Hell comes out on consoles, or if it is, again, I haven't looked, but if they ever add co-op to consoles, that is definitely a game we need to play because...
That'd be fun for sure. Absolutely.
It's got its scary moments. That's for sure.
And then, is that all you have? Because I have,
yeah,
two,
I
have two announcements.
Okay, yeah, that's that. Thanks again to Sean.
I'm so jealous of the play Green Hell. And like I said, Yeast is always, it's on my list of RPGs. Like that and Tales are like two of my lists of RPGs I want to get into. Not Persona, because I don't have that kind of time.
Oh, apparently Yeast is like 40 hours or some shit like that. So it's a long game. So anyways.
So my two announcements.
Yes.
We are tabling Earth Defense Force 5.
For next time.
For something. It's going to be put on the back burner for now.
Yeah.
Like, it was way more difficult than we anticipated. We both were having fun, and our audience engagement wasn't where we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So, as you listen to this episode right now, in 2 days, on Wednesday,
we are starting Monster Hunter World.
I have never played a Monster Hunter game before. the only Monster Hunter like game I played was it was a Final Fantasy one on the 3DS. I've heard it's very similar to it.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
There's a Final Fantasy game that's like similar to Monster Hunter where you could go on different like quests and you kill monsters to collect loot and you come and you build different things for it. It's a Final Fantasy game.
Interesting.
I'll look it up for next week so I can talk about it a bit better.
Okay.
But that is happening every Wednesday. And the plan is to play through the story co-oply and then do hunts and stuff as we need to. And then hopefully review that. So
yeah,
that will be a weekly Twitch series. Maybe we might be reviewed on Twitch, honestly.
Well, yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea. I think the plan is that we want to do the story ourselves, like, with each other. But I think the plan is when we do, like, the extra hunts and kind of that grind that I have heard is very much a part of Monster Hunter is I think we were going to ask people if they want to.
Yes, I know we've had Fetus of Doom, Alex, obviously a good friend of the podcast. There are a lot of people who have asked me if they can join us. I want this to be a community kind of thing because it seems like a lot of, especially people are excited for the new Monster Hunter Rise coming out.
Yeah.
So the whole goal is to kind of make it very involved with the community. So
yeah,
that's definitely an open invitation. Hit us up. We'll bring you on. Maybe even like plan like a night or double up or whatever. But we want it to be fun. So that's the goal. Especially since we have kind of discovered that kaiju games aren't that spooky. So let's have fun with the audience.
Yeah, may as well just dive right into that kaiju game, even though we know it's not scary.
And so that being said, this is my episode. You can tell by the title. We're talking Hitchcock. It may not be what you're expecting. This is going to be a little bit different than my normal director spotlight episodes. I want to make a quick note that the audio clips you're about to hear, I do not own. They are not mine. I don't claim them to be mine. I am just using them for entertainment purposes and to critique and discuss. So, with all that being said, Justin, hit that music and let's talk about Hitchcock. I know that's longer than normal, but I love that Vertigo theme, so hopefully you all did too. Justin, I have to know.
Yes.
Have you seen many of Hitchcock's films?
Oh, I'm pretty sure I've only seen Psycho.
Okay, cool. So this is going to be a fun discussion. This is going to be a discussion in three parts.
Okay.
And the first part is talking about how Sir Alfred Hitchcock, because yes, he is a knight, truly changed not only horror cinema,
okay,
but filmmaking in general forever.
Okay. He was knighted? I mean, we'll get into that. Maybe,
yes, he was. So, Hitchcock, the man. He is known as the master of suspense. Hitchcock is most likely the most studied and influential filmmaker of all time. This is an incredible thing to say because there are a lot of directors out there who have really changed the game, but I think you might agree with me by the time we get to the end of this. He has had over 50 feature films over a 6-decade career. He had a very, very successful TV show. Have you heard of it? Hitchcock Presents, I think is what it's called. Also got an early predecessor to X-Files or whatever.
No, not at all.
He also, which is makes him very different as opposed to other directors, became personally famous almost more so than the actors and actresses that he directed due to his in-depth interviews going into his filmmaking process.
So, like, more so than, like, even director interviews now, or just kind of
back? Yeah. Like, okay. I think now probably the best one we have is probably Tarantino. Like, he seems pretty willing to sit down and talk about his process. But if you go on YouTube and search for Hitchcock interviews, there is just decades worth of different interviews of him sitting down and talking about his style, his movies, everything, which is really cool from a historian perspective, right? Because you can kind of look into his actual mind because you have his own words.
Yeah.
So, over his career, he has had over 46 Academy Award nominations.
And 50 movies? Six of those. Oh, a nomination.
But he was nominated 46 times.
Yeah.
He was nominated 5 separate times for Best Director, and he lost them all. I'm going to get into that a little bit later.
Okay.
He was knighted in 1980, which was the same year he passed away. He was knighted like 2 months before he actually passed away.
Was he... Now, I don't know if this is like known or not, but was he... sick when they knighted him? Like, did they know
he was that old? He was I think he died pass? At age 90, okay. I believe.
Oh, okay.
He was very old.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about his movies.
Okay.
This is really hard. So this was the part where I had to make some cuts because there's two more segments coming after this, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get bogged down in all his movies because there's a lot of them. Like, not only just horror, just in general.
Yeah.
So I cut some stuff out. I tried to focus it. So hopefully, they're going to be pissed at me by the end of this anyway. But just know I try my best to have a good conversation about it.
Okay.
His 5 movies that he was nominated for Best Director was first Rebecca, the film Rebecca, in 1940. He lost that one to Victor Fleming. Do you know what Victor Fleming directed?
No. I mean, you know the answers. No.
Well, I'm asking because they're giant films. It's Gone with the Wind.
Okay, I do know Gone with the Wind. Yes, actually,
that's why I asked you.
Yeah. No, I don't know names or...
I don't know. In 1944, he was nominated again for the film Lifeboat. He lost that one, too, to Michael Curtiz. Do you know what
Curtiz... No.
Casablanca.
Okay. Know the movie, don't know the name. Yeah.
That's why I'm saying there's a chance. He was actually nominated again the next year, 1945, for the film Spellbound. He lost that one to Leo McCarey. I know you don't know this one. It's called Going My Way.
I don't even know that movie. So.
Okay. The fourth one, he was nominated for Rear Window in 1954. Lost that to Fred Zinnemann. From Here to Eternity was the film that won that year.
I don't know that one either.
And finally, in 1960... he was nominated for Best Director for Psycho.
I'm assuming that's the year he won. No, what you said he lost all of them, right? Yeah.
He lost to William Wyler.
No, I don't know.
Ben-Hur. Ben-Hur.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Ben-Hur. Yeah, the like...
like I said, so when I mentioned that he lost, it's not so much that he like was just nominated and like not good enough. Like the movies he lost to were like seminal classics.
Yeah.
So... there's that. And then I kind of put together a list outside of those 5 movies that people might know him for.
Okay.
And I'm curious, because you said you haven't seen anything besides Psycho, so I'm curious of these ones, which ones you've even heard of.
Okay.
And I try to keep it specifically more towards horror, but also like bigger titles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So first, The Man Who Knew Too Much.
It sounds familiar, but
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, came out in 1941.
I know the new one, but I don't know the old one. Yeah.
Strangers on a Train, 1951.
Sounds familiar again, but I have not seen it.
It's a really good movie. You should watch that one. That's a fun, that's like a fun date night movie I would recommend.
Okay.
Dial M for Murder, 1954.
I've never personally seen it, but I mean,
you've heard of it.
Pretty sure. Yeah, I've heard of it, and it's like still...
So you've heard of all these ones so far, then, at least, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I've heard of them, but... No personal experience with them.
The theme that I stole for this opening of this credit, Vertigo, 1958.
Again, sounds familiar, but I got nothing.
North by Northwest, 1959.
I think I might have actually seen that movie.
Okay, cool.
I think. Right? I don't know. It's hard to remember what happened last week. So
the movie we're reviewing next week, The Birds.
Yeah, I have heard of that, actually. I mean, obviously.
You'll be seeing it now within a week.
Yeah.
And then the last one I mentioned was Marnie, 1964. Also has Tippi Hedren in it.
Doesn't ring a bell at all.
Okay. And then I also want to talk about So I mentioned that Hitchcock kind of transcended his films in a way a lot of directors don't, right? Like, if you think about today, directors like Christopher Nolan, Martin Scorsese, right? Like these big name, or Bong Joon-ho, like all these, even these newer directors, we know about them, but they kind of take a back seat to their actors, or even Spielberg, right? Like, you know Spielberg, but he's not like out there as a presence.
Yeah.
And I think it's really crazy to think of the actors who worked with Hitchcock that he kind of almost transcended, which is crazy to say, because he worked on multiple films with Cary Grant. You've heard of Cary Grant, right?
No, you know me and names. I'm like, I'm horrible.
Ingrid Bergman, James Stewart, and you've definitely heard of Grace Kelly, right?
Who's Cary Grant?
I'm not engaging you on this. He's like one of the
I'm asking you a question.
He's one of the most famous actors of like the black and white era. Like if you go to Turner Classic Movie, he's like on every single movie.
Okay.
Like here, watch this. You keep us in too. Hey Devin, can you come here really quickly? I need to prove a point.
Okay, well you can't ask her. That's not a fair point.
No, I'm just showing you. So before she gets here, her and her mom, like her mom's obsessed with Cary Grant films. So watch this. Yeah. What is it, girl? Will you name me some Cary Grant movies? Loud, into the mic.
You asked me way too quick. I don't know. What do you mean? Cary Grant
movies. Like movies that Cary Grant was in that you like.
Thank you, Devin.
Like,
think point Audrey has Hepburn been proven. Thank you very much.
So there's Rowan Holiday.
Yes.
Okay. Oh my God. I don't know why I can't think of any. His Girl Friday.
Yes.
Why can't I think of any more? I legitimately... Is it Vertigo?
Yes.
I can't think of any.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I stressed you out.
Now I'm stressed.
Okay. I apologize.
Thank you, Devin, for proving my point.
I was just, Justin has never heard of, had never heard of Cary Grant.
Okay. Yeah. Honestly, like, that's not crazy.
Okay. She backs you up.
It's not a crazy thing.
See? Thank you, Devin.
But you have heard of Hitchcock, though, right?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Which kind of proves my point, is that you know about Hitchcock, a lot about Hitchcock, but you don't know a lot about Cary Grant. When Cary Grant was like the actor of the day back then.
I'm leaving that in, by the way.
You should. I wanted to.
I'm going to.
All right. Take the dog. Thanks, Evan.
Yeah. Sorry. I couldn't help you there.
I know. There's a reason why.
I still can't think
That's of why a you're an accountant.
I still can't think of a single Cary Grant movie.
Your mom would be disappointed. That was my wife. I love her. Okay. Moving on. So I wanted to talk about some of the film techniques that Hitchcock became really famous for. Because I mentioned there at the beginning, right, not only like were his films so instrumental for horror and just like pop culture and everything, but the way he actually filmed movies changed it up too. So one of the things that he is credited towards like revolutionizing is the way the camera moved. In particular, the camera movement mimicked a person's gaze, which turned the audience almost into a voyeur.
Okay.
And think about all the movies or the horror movies now that do that. There's one that we've reviewed on this podcast and I've talked about endlessly.
Oh, dude, again, I don't even remember what the fuck happened last week.
Halloween.
Oh, yes. Okay.
You talk about how it mimics Myers movements even like the Friday movies and mimics Jason's like eye movements and stuff. Like that was something that Hitchcock is credited towards like creating. So think about how like just in the slasher genre alone, how much that's kind of changed things.
Yeah, kind of like as you kind of obviously talked about it and brought up those, oh my God, what the fuck is me with words today? Examples.
I told you got to engage me. This has got to be a discussion.
I know. Me and words today don't go good. Now that you bring it up and kind of give me those examples, you can definitely, I mean, even now, right? Like even films coming out now definitely still have that main element, the POV element, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, which is like I said, it's crazy because that's him. That's a Hitchcock thing. The second one is probably something you've definitely heard of before, even if you can't describe it. And that's the way he framed his shots to maximize anxiety and fear for the audience. And he called that his bomb theory. Have you heard of Hitchcock's bomb theory? Yeah.
I have not, actually.
Okay, well, fun. We'll talk about it. So it's framed like this. There's two scenarios. Scenario A. Two people are talking at a table, and a bomb goes off underneath the table.
Okay.
We're shocked. Like, the audience is shocked in the moment. and we're scared, but that feeling is fleeting. Like, it's like, boom, and then like, okay. Like, you know, high tension and then drop off.
Yeah.
But that's not what Hitchcock did. And what Hitchcock did is what changed everything up. The audience knows in scenario B that there's a bomb underneath the table. And we know that that bomb's going to go off in 15 minutes. Now our two characters are sitting there talking under the table. And we know that that time is ticking down. But the characters don't.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, so it kind of gives
the audience has more information than the characters, and we're stressed about it. And there's a lot of horror films, but I think one director who has taken that and done fantastic things with it, and I'll just name the movie that he did it best with, Pulp Fiction, Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, yeah.
Think about how much information you know, especially with the time hopping and stuff, like how much you know what's going to go on. Or did you see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
No, I still have not.
Okay.
You can say it, though. That's fine.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like, we know that the Manson murders are tied in. We know that living next door to him is the family that was murdered by the Manson family.
Yeah.
And so the whole time, we're waiting for this to happen. Like, that's the whole climax of the movie. We're waiting for this moment to happen. And what Tarantino did in that one is he changes it up. So, like, you're ready for it to happen, and then, like, he changes course, and it's not what you thought was going to happen.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Which is, it was, oh, my God, it was so cathartic, and it was super violent, but you're laughing the whole time because you're so, like, you were so stressed getting ready to watch, like a pregnant woman get murdered and stuff because that's what happened in real life, and that's not what happens. So, yes, that was another thing credit to him, too, is the ability to, like, really create anxiety and fear for the audience without doing, like, cheap shit.
Yeah.
And like, but also keeping your character unaware, so keeping true to like the plot of the film, but keeping your audience really tied in for the thrill.
I like that, actually. I'm not gonna lie, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant, right? It's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, I would even appreciate that, like that. See, that kind of theory there is something that you could even enjoy, like in a video game, but you don't really see it done a lot.
No.
But no, that's interesting.
Then I have a quote from the film critic Robin Wood.
Okay.
About what the meaning of a Hitchcock film is. And I thought she summed it up pretty well, so I figured, why try to do it myself when I thought she did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
The meaning of Hitchcock film is... Wait a second. Is there in the method, in the progression from shot to shot, a Hitchcock film is an organism with the whole implied... in every detail, and every detail related to the whole. Basically, what she's saying there is everything that Hitchcock includes in a movie mattered.
Okay.
From the newspapers to the... Yeah. And, like, the whole theme of the movie ties back into the small details, too.
He uses every part of the animal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, and now I want to kind of talk a little bit more about his influence on pop culture. Because, again, I think it's really telling that, like, put my wife on the spot, she kind of let me down. But, like
yeah, do you really want to do that again?
Hitchcock. You could probably describe to me how Hitchcock looks. But if I asked you to describe Grace Kelly, who's, like, one of the first starlets, like, of the Hollywood era, I doubt you could. Which is fine. Yeah, yeah. But it's crazy to me that, like, this director... was a bigger personality and more entrenched in, like, the psyche than his actors.
Yeah.
So I want to think... I want you to think about your favorite horror films post-1960. What's your favorite horror film? You've told me before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah.
And you said you've seen Psycho.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How many similarities can you think of? Like, just, like, don't even name or anything, but how similar are they? Like, can you see where...
Like, I can definitely see, like, I guess DNA would be the right word. Like, I can definitely see, like, DNA being brought from Psycho into, I mean, it's basically Psycho on drugs, actually. Definitely. I can definitely see some, and like, major similarities, actually.
It's similar to my favorite horror films. Like, I talked about Halloween already.
Yeah.
But Blair Witch Project. Yeah. The Bomb Theory. We know when that movie starts, these three people don't leave the woods. and it's voyeuristic as hell. It's fucking found footage. Like, I mean, come on, yeah, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Like, I think about like your favorite horror movies and think about what we kind of talked about and think about like how, or even beyond horror, think about your this movies like in general and these kind of filmmaking characteristics that were taken from Hitchcock style. Because Hitchcock did not just direct horror films. It's what he's best known for, but he also directed thrillers and almost like some kind of comedy sometimes. But he did more than just horror.
Yeah.
But on that same note, he brought horror to the mainstream and almost made it acceptable for it to be at what I call the big table or the Academy Awards, right? Obviously, The Exorcist won and did well, but it may not have gotten that kind of recognition if Hitchcock didn't lose with Psycho. You know what I mean? Like,
he kind of crawled so
they could run.
Yeah, like I do remember. I honestly can't remember where I heard it from, but I remember somebody talking about like the history of Psycho in a movie theater and like how Psycho was like pushing the limits of like what people were willing to watch in theaters.
And think about
fucking insane.
Yeah, and now. Think like, well, we watched them already on this podcast.
Yes.
Came out in 1954, 6 years before Psycho. That was considered a horror film. Now think of Psycho.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I know fair. Now we have Human Centipede and Hostel and all that crazy Eli Roth bullshit. But like, think about.
Man, okay, but the thing is like, whenever I think about people freaking out and like wanting to like faint from Psycho, I think like, what? How would these people feel if they watched like Halloween 2018 in theaters?
No idea.
Like, they might fucking die.
There was only one film that really kind of rocked me to my core. Saw 3D almost got me with when the two boyfriends are fighting over the girl who's cheating on both of them and they cut her open. Like, that almost got me, but.
Oh, that almost got to me just because I ate like way too much popcorn before and like the 3D was really fucking with me.
Exactly. But the one that really, like, I almost actually left the theater.
Yeah.
And I like Eli Roth, but it was Green Inferno.
Never seen it, and I don't want to, if I'm being like completely honest.
Like, the first cannibal scene, like, dude, it was, I mean, I know it's a movie, right? But.
Yeah. Well, but that's the thing, is like, you have a director like Eli Roth who likes to push the gore, basically.
He likes his gore.
Yeah. And I'm not huge for it.
It's fine. And then I want to talk about a couple of things that I think we both like that have been referenced. Like, he's been referenced in so much stuff, but I kind of highlighted four because I think that not only us, but our audience will be able to recognize it. First, the episode Mr. Yin Presents from the TV show Psych. Which I think
we've talked about this before. I have not seen Psych.
Oh, well, a lot of people have, so it's your loss.
Yeah,
literally, the Mr. Yin, the serial killer, bases all of his death traps around Psycho, around Hitchcock films. Like, everything in that episode is referenced to Hitchcock, which is incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
Next, that's like everything. So this is kind of like a cheap one, but he has been featured and referenced in The Simpsons. And he has actually had a couple of Treehouse of Horror segments based off of his stuff.
Yeah. Who hasn't?
Next, Lady Gaga, one of my all-time favorites ever, not only of music, but also in acting. If you remember, in the opening theme from Vertigo, she sampled that in the single Born This Way. And Justin, go ahead and hit the button.
Sorry, I had to find it. There it is. How long is Psycho?
She did a wonderful job there in the song Bad Romance using his films to describe anal sex. So, there you go, Gaga.
So wait, is he about animal sex? Does he like animal sex?
No, that's just Lady Gaga using his movies to make a pun to reference anal sex.
Oh, anal. I thought you said animal. That's why I was very confused and very worried about where this episode was going.
No. And then...
Hey, wait. Hold on. You said you weren't going to talk about butt stuff, and you just did. I'm proud of you. Go ahead.
And then finally, the last pop culture reference is one of my favorite shows growing up was That 70s Show. And there was a whole episode dedicated to him.
Do you want me to play that thing now? Okay.
Pretty lady. Hey, you know what would be fun? Is if we were in an Alfred Hitchcock movie right now, and we didn't know it, and then someone told us, and we were like, oh man, I'm in a movie!
Yeah, okay, I'm out of here.
Wait, but this would be my reaction too. That was
you know what would cheer you up? A little trick or treating. Hello? Stop bouncing the damn ball and let's do something.
Yeah, you know I can't, Fez, because I can't even look at you. I don't know whether to throw you out or throw you down and make sweet love to you.
You know, that says more about you than it does him.
Well, I'm not the one dressed like a damn girl.
But the dumb girl has your ball.
Like I care about a... Man, that's my ball.
Cut it there. Fez is dressed like Dr. Frankenfurter in this scene from Rocky Horror.
Man, I miss that 70s show.
I know. I love it.
I will say I'm kind of surprised you didn't bring up like I don't know if this is for later, so I'm sorry if this is pre-spoiling.
I'll have you cut it out if it is.
Okay. Like about the whole they made basically Psycho into a show like with
No, we brought that out. I didn't talk about that because I did not like Bates Motel. The Psycho remake, which starred Vince Vaughn, is shite.
No. I know I tried to watch Bates Motel. I didn't like the first season. I like to give things a full season. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it, but it definitely got more interesting towards the end. Mm-hmm. And I know Michelle actually watched it all the way through, and she liked it. I mean, I don't think she actually watched the last season, but she said it was okay. It was just very drama, like too drama heavy. Yeah, and
I love Vera Farmiga. Like, she's one of my favorite actresses, but I couldn't get into it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair. But yeah, I just wasn't sure if that was...
Yeah, but that's all I have about Hitchcock the Guy. So I want to transition into our second part of this discussion, which is Tippi Hedren, The Birds, the movie we're reviewing next week, and the Me Too movement. And the first thing I want to say is I'll make it very, very clear. My focus on Tippi Hedren is not to ignore Hitchcock's treatment of other actresses, because that is an entirely separate discussion that we honestly just don't have a time to in this episode. I'm trying to keep it focused. Or even how he treated women in film. Like, there's whole essays and thought pieces out there about how he, like, his misogyny in his films, the way he has women perceive things in films, how he's constantly killing blonde women in his films, like, violently, like, and there's, like, movies about Hitchcock and how he treated his female actresses. We're focusing on Tippi Hedren because next week we're reviewing The Birds, and I purposely picked The Birds. It's Kaiju, but Tippi is the star of The Birds.
Okay.
And I also... Yes. So this is where I want to start. And I think when we're going to talk about the Me Too movement and talk about accusations of sexual assault, especially from positions of power, it's really important to hear the actual victim speak. So, Justin, will you play the clip from CBS Sunday Morning?
If you need to be reminded why they called Alfred Hitchcock the master of suspense, just take a look at his 1963 film, The Birds. It was 31-year-old Tippi Hedren's first big movie role, and she was a natural as the blonde victim. But there was horror off-screen, too. Hitchcock, she says, made her life miserable.
You can say, Me Too.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. And I did have those Me Too kinds of situations. Oh, yes.
In her 2016 autobiography, Hedren says the director hounded her for sex and lashed out at her when she refused.
He said, I'll ruin your career.
Yes.
And it was because you...
Because I turned him down.
Why do you think there are biographers, people who've worked with Hitchcock, who say, well, this wasn't the man that I knew?
Aren't they lucky? And why would they know? Why would they have the same relationship that I would have?
That's kind of fucked up. I didn't know
I know.
Much about Hitchcock
and
what a piece of shit.
There are some people out there,
okay,
because, I mean, if you think about the Brett Kavanaugh situation that happened in the United States, who kind of make the claim that, like, why didn't you talk about it sooner, right? Hitchcock's dead. Is she just trying to ride the coattails of the Me Too movement? Well, I found an interview from the RTE, which is a Irish broadcasting network.
Okay.
From 2012. Would you go ahead and play that one?
Absolutely.
Spoken very highly about Alfred Hitchcock as a director, but the impression that one gets is that he was very possessive towards you as a woman.
Yeah, well, you know, this was sort of his MO. He had a tendency to become obsessed a little about all of his leading ladies.
And when did it become a problem for you?
It became a problem at the end of Marnie, and the demands that he put on me were some that I couldn't handle. And there was a lot leading up to this. There was a lot of control. He had me followed. He did things like have my handwriting analyzed. He just wanted to control,
yeah,
all, you know, my life. And there I was with a grown woman with a daughter, and it wasn't the kind of deal that I would make.
Was he interested in you physically?
The demands were really awful.
What do you mean?
They really were. Well, there were things that I was supposed to do that I refused to do. And I said, I want to get out of the contract. And he said, well, you can't. You have your daughter to take care of. Your parents, yeah, are getting older. And I said, well, you know, none of the people who love me would want me in a situation in which I'm not happy.
Yes.
And I said, I do want to get out. And he said, I'll ruin your career. And he did. He kept me under contract for, oh, gosh, it was a year and a half or so, paying me my $600 a week. And after I got out of Marnie and the Birds, I was, as the Hollywood expression goes, hot.
Yes.
In studio situation. And I would later learn that so many different directors wanted me for their films, and he would just say, she's not available. And the one that really hurt the most was François Truffaut wanted me for a film, and he said I wasn't available.
It strikes me, talking to you this evening, that you still feel very emotional about that.
Well, there was the good side and the bad side, but
yeah,
the bad side was really bad, so it was difficult.
I first want to say that that interviewer kind of sucks.
Yeah. Oh, I might ask better questions. Might. I'm, you know.
So.
But yes.
Yeah. Did you listen to these before I sent them to you to add on to here?
No, I specifically did not want to because I wanted to come at this fresh. So I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. I mean, obviously, I had heard from you and Rachel that Hitchcock was kind of a monster, but I wasn't sure like how or anything like that. So yeah, that's wow. That was really shitty.
Yeah. And the thing is, like I said, we are specifically focusing on Tippi Hedren for this discussion.
Yeah.
But there are other actresses who have made the exact same accusation. And not only that, Hitchcock also treated his male actors terribly. He called them cattle.
Oh,
okay. So much so that at the end of filming, I think, North by Northwest, the male actors actually bought him a cow and left it on the soundstage.
Oh, well, good for them.
So,
at least, like,
but
standing
up for
themselves.
We're talking about Tippi because we're reviewing, yeah, The Birds next week. And when you listen to those interviews, like, it really makes you... It makes you question why this,
yeah,
has, like, what, why we don't hear about this more often. Before you heard me starting to plan this episode and kind of talking to Rachel, were you aware of any of this kind of stuff?
None of it. I mean, like, that's obvious. I mean, honestly, that's probably like my ignorance, just because I've never. The thing is, like, especially with like movie stuff, I never really pay attention. But I mean, if you ask me about like the Me Too movement in video games,
yeah,
and like video game companies, that's I like am you know, yeah, it's my my thing.
But
the thing
is, though, is like we like I established going into this, Hitchcock is like a global culture icon.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that he still is after being, I mean, a monster, basically. Like, is he the kaiju this season?
Yeah, and one of the things for me, and it is very laid out well, I thought, even though the interviewer sucked, in that RTE interview. So the contract that she signed with making films with Hitchcock.
Yeah.
The fact that she wouldn't give in to his sexual demands.
Yeah.
And he ruined her career.
Did she ever...
No.
Do it? No, no.
She had other movie roles, but the she was a supporting... She had a supporting role in Marnie, but okay. She starred in The Birds.
Okay.
And we'll review Birds next week, which I think we'll actually have a kind of different kind of discussion probably now when we get to it.
Yep.
It's incredible. Like, think about if... this is just a totally off-the-wall example. I don't know if this is even true. I'm just saying it to kind of give you something you can relate to.
Okay.
I think Jennifer Lawrence's career kind of took off after Hunger Games.
Yes.
Imagine if the director of that film held her under contract and wouldn't let her go.
Because she
didn't want to have sex. We'd be asking questions, right?
Yeah.
Hollywood never did.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Like, think about how easy it would have been to be like, Hitchcock will let her out of her contract because she won't fuck him. Like, it would have, like...
Oh, like, now?
If it happened now, it would have ruined him, right?
Oh, absolutely. I would hope so.
It'd be the end. But back then, it was just, okay, all right.
Back then, was it just like another Tuesday? Like,
what? Dude, think Harvey Weinstein, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. Like, that CBS clip is from 2018, which was released the Sunday of the Oscars in that year, which is when the Weinstein thing first started opening up, when Kevin Spacey got busted. Like, Hollywood was like this 3 years ago, dude. And they're still dealing with this shit because we'll talk about it later, but Joss Whedon, that's finally coming out.
Yeah, that's fucked.
But we'll get to that. Let's stay focused on Tippi. I think that next week, because I've seen Birds before, I have some thoughts on Birds.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about some other things that Hitchcock did on Birds that has nothing to do with sexual assault, but more about him being a fucking psycho director. When we watch that movie next week in our audience, I encourage you to watch it. I'm pretty sure most of Hitchcock's films are available online. Watch that movie and realize that. Because Marnie was starting to gain attention before Birds.
Okay.
So, like, her star was rising. And Hitchcock, the entire time they were filming this movie, was trying to sexually assault her, and he wouldn't let her.
Oh, boy. Yeah. It's definitely going to be...
And think about the way he portrays her in the film. Because you haven't seen it yet. Okay. I have. So there's already things in my head, like, working.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. And kind of the final segment here, because I think her words spoke more than we ever could do, so I'm not going to stay focused here. We'll move to the next part. Is with Hedren on the record. She talked about it in her autobiography, multiple interviews over an extended period of time, with her viable claims of sexual assault.
Yeah.
Hitchcock is still praised. Psych, that episode of Psych was only a few years back.
Oh, really?
Lady Gaga only really became popular, 2009, 2010? And she's still popular. I mean, Bad Romance and Born This Way are some older singles, but still not that long ago.
Yeah.
And this thing about how often you hear Psycho referenced, or North by Northwest, or hell, Rear Window, which is one of the most fantastic thriller films of all time. But it's not just his work we praise. We praise the man. We praise Hitchcock, Sir Alfred Hitchcock. And, like, I talk about it all the time. My local art house theater, every October. Except for last October with, you know, COVID.
Yeah.
They have what they call Hitchcocktober, where they just play his movies every night. Just, like, go through the classics. $2 to get in, and they even have, for some of the specialer ones, they have Hitchcock talking about it for, like, half an hour, one of his old interviews discussing his film.
Still? Well, I mean, obviously not still, but...
Well, not last year, but the year before, yeah. I went and saw, I think, Rear Window, and they had one of those things going on. And that leads me to the last part of this discussion.
Okay.
And it's something that I have mentioned on here before. It is something I struggle with, and in this moment, I'm struggling with a lot. Which our patrons will know, but I haven't really talked about on the podcast yet. And the last segment I want to talk about for this discussion is, are we able to separate the art from the artist? That's an open question. Because myself, sometimes I think, yeah. I mean, you think back to Richard Wagner, the famous composer. You may not know his name, but if you heard his music, you know it. Listen to it afterwards. Okay. We'll definitely get copyright struck for playing his shit.
Okay.
He was a vicious anti-Semite.
Of course.
Think about Pablo Picasso. He used to beat his wife and his mistresses. But you know his artwork.
Yeah, that's fair.
And why even go into the past when we can talk about more modern things? Have you seen American Beauty?
Yes. Yes. A long time ago, but yes.
Did you like it?
Eh. I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm
it's
not
more of a drama. Yeah. But you probably like Seven.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about Kevin Spacey, I think. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Could you still watch Seven? Knowing that Kevin Spacey was trying to sexually take advantage of young boys?
I have a way of going about it. I can separate... for the most part, mm-hmm. I am able to separate the artist from the art, but I do it in a way where, honestly, I will, like, I mean, obviously, I'm sure the Manson stuff is going to come up here, but, like, if I, because I know you're obviously a ex or a current or whatever, yeah, but, like, if they were a musical artist. And I still was able to, it kind of varies, like, depending on how I feel that day, basically.
Sure.
But let's say, for example, I'm talking about Manson, and I was able to listen to some of his music. I wouldn't stream it on Spotify. I wouldn't buy it. I would illegally download it as, like, my own way of saying, I still like this music, but fuck you, I'm not giving you any money.
So let's not even wait. And let's talk about Manson.
Okay.
I think many people on this podcast probably know that I am a huge fan. He is my cousin through marriage, like, in the real world.
Yeah.
I've seen him in concert. I own lots of merch of his, including t-shirts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wore a shirt of his to my rehearsal dinner. Piss off my parents, and also because I liked them.
Yeah.
Me and Devin were announced at our wedding to Tainted Love by Marilyn Manson. Marilyn Manson's music helped me when I was going through a lot of rough times in my life because he was angry and pissed and wanted to be himself. And his music kind of spoke to that. And in his interviews, one of the ones I remember the most when in Bullying for Columbine, people were blaming Manson at the time for the shooting.
Yeah.
Blaming his music and all that. And Michael Moore famously asked him, if you could talk to the shooters, what would you say? And he said, I wouldn't say anything. I would listen to them because obviously no one else ever did. But Marilyn Manson has long had these kind of rumors floating around him. And last week, with Evan Rachel Wood coming forward and finally naming him as her abuser, the floodgates kind of finally broke open. Evan Rachel Wood is a really well-known actress for her work on Westworld, and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, and all of this shit started coming out. And it's all really sick. Up until this Manson thing, I always thought I could separate art from artists. And I always kind of jokingly said Kanye West. Kanye West is a shithead. Kanye West is a grifter at times. Kanye West is kind of a dummy.
Yeah.
But Kanye West made great music. And Kanye West wrote music that, again, helped me through some dark... His album, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, helped me through one of the darkest points in my life when I was at West Point. That's not an exaggeration. But I never had to reconcile shit like this. I have not listened to a Marilyn Manson song since these accusations came out, and I do not kid the audience when I say I listened to Manson every day. He's like in all my playlists. I haven't listened to any music on Spotify because I'd have to go through and purge it off my playlists.
Yeah.
I put my t-shirts away. I put some posters away, signed posters. I no longer know if I am capable of separating the art from the artist. And I think a lot of it had to do when I was researching about Tippi Hedren and Hitchcock. Were his filmmaking techniques so important? Does he need that
not
praise?
Not if it comes at the expense of somebody
else. Like sacrificing all these women to his monstrosity.
No, it wasn't worth it.
Like what kind of altar are we making? You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at with Manson, is his music was so important to me. He was a featured song in my wedding, for Christ's sake. But now that this is all out there, is it worth it? And there's going to be people dealing with similar things, because Joss Whedon has always been accused of some shit. I never watched Buffy. I watched it with my wife a few years ago because she wanted me to, and it was okay. It wasn't my thing, but it was okay. But I know a lot of people looked at that show for female empowerment, for a on-screen lesbian relationship. A lot of shit that show did. But Joss Whedon was a fucking monster to those actresses.
Oh, absolutely. I do just want to say, I used the Manson example, but I haven't honestly listened to a Manson song in a long, long time. But I just use that as an example because, honestly, even Seven, even a Kevin Spacey movie, I can't remember the last time I watched a Kevin Spacey movie. I don't really go back for that stuff, but kind of in that same vein of things, I know there's been a lot of accusations, and I mean, honestly, I believe a lot of the, all of the accusations. About the higher ups in Ubisoft, not the main Yves Guillemot, but it sucks. It really does, because it makes the games that those people worked on really hard to go back to. And I honestly haven't yet, but I think for me, it's kind of difficult because sometimes I'm able to just separate it if it was a long time ago. If they're dead, as long as they aren't.
That's Rachel's rule. Yeah, if
they aren't receiving anything from it, from me, and that's kind of the thing too, is when you go into it, you still have to have you don't have to, obviously it's personal opinion, but you still have this kind of looming over the whole thing. Like, I know there was, I thought I talked to you about it a couple months ago. There was like this YouTube channel I used to watch.
You did. When I was like 20. You talked to me about this when the Manson stuff came out.
Yeah. And there was this guy that was like, oh, he was my favorite. Yeah, he was hilarious. And then like all this shit came out about him. And I was like, I had posters. I mean, they were already rolled up because I haven't watched them in like 10 years. But I just like, yeah, they could just go in the garbage now. Because like I don't, I think it really depends on the art.
Yeah.
And I mean, the person really.
And that's why the Manson stuff's right? so hard for me is because like his image, his personality, him is like entrenched in the music. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yo, like, absolutely.
An actor or some directors, like you can kind of like not see the actor because they're playing the role or the director is behind the screen. But that goes back to this conversation about Hitchcock. What did I make incredibly clear when we first started off? Hitchcock is more ingrained in the social conscience, even today, than some of his most famous actors and actresses.
And that's real. I mean, obviously that's not like the most fucked up part, but it kind of is at the same time. Like, it is fucked up that I can tell you I know who Alfred Hitchcock is, but I don't know who T.P. Hendricks is, right? Like, it's obviously before we start talking about this, but it's fucked up. It is.
And so it is something I'm dealing with, and it's the first time where I've kind of questioned like my stance on it. And I don't know. I don't know when I'll listen to Manson again. What I do know is next week we're reviewing The Birds.
Yep.
And I have some more stuff to talk about that doesn't really have to do with the Me Too sexual assault stuff with T.P. Hendricks.
Okay.
But there's a lot of other shit that happened, namely with the titular thing.
Oh, The Birds themselves?
And T.P.
I don't remember if it was like where I heard it, but I didn't like the Birds like attacker, and he was like all for it.
He encouraged it. I don't remember. He planned it. He lied to her.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Oh, but we're going to talk about that. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm holding back on. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the thing. It's like, we're going to review it, but especially talk about this. Like, I was incredibly, when I watched this movie, I was like, she sucks. Like, she's a terrible actress. Like,
yeah.
But I am honestly interested to go watch this now.
Yeah. Like, with all the knowledge that you have about how shitty he is.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been like probably 10 years since I've seen this movie. One thing to remember is because this is one of his few films with a female lead, with a female perspective. Like, one of his very few films of that six-decade career that is a female-centered, female-pushed movie. And you're going to see, Justin, you're going to see a lot of what I've been talking about how he perceives women, or perceived, because he is dead. And they buried his ashes out in the ocean, so we can't even go piss on his grave.
I'm kind of surprised that they didn't, like, renounce his knighthood. Just saying. It's a thing. They've done it before to other people. They can do it to him.
He's Alfred Hitchcock.
I don't give a fuck.
I know, like, but that's... Right?
He
changed cinema, right? He did all these great things.
It's like, oh, I air quoted, but we're recording a podcast, so that doesn't really play out. But air quote.
Him and Kubrick, right?
Yeah.
They're the guys who changed cinema.
Yeah, there.
And I talked about with Kubrick, probably not much as I should have. I was younger, but I talked about how Kubrick mentally broke Shelley Duvall.
Yep. Man, these guys were fucked up.
But they made it for art, right?
Not worth it.
We're still talking about it. To some it is. To pop culture it is. To many it is.
But when you like really look at it, like, it's no. It wasn't worth like mental... Okay, Shelley Duvall, perfect example. It wasn't worth mentally screwing this person up for the rest of their lives.
Well, keep that in mind. Because we're horror fans.
Yeah.
And this is Women in Horror Month, which is kind of why I planned it for this. But when you watch like a best of list, right? Like the best horror films, the best scares, and listen to who they reference.
You know what? I watched one of these like the other day.
Was it Eli Roth?
No, actually, there was no Eli Roth.
Because he has one on Shudder.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We haven't even touched on Rosemary's Baby on this podcast yet.
No, and I've never seen it, if I'm being honest with you.
It's a fantastic film. Director sodomized a young 12-year-old girl.
Roman Polanski? Yep. What a dickhead. He can go fucking... Is he dead?
Nope. He got a standing ovation at the Oscars, even though he wasn't there, led by Meryl Streep. For winning a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Was he... Did somebody, hopefully that girl's father, sodomize him in return?
No, he left the country and never came back. There's still a warrant for his arrest out in California. But he got a standing ovation 3 years ago, I think, at the Academy Awards.
I knew there was a reason I didn't watch the Oscars.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I want to leave this. Is like, yeah. I think I would like to challenge this Women in Horror Month, and with some of these people, the Joss Whedons, the Marilyn Mansons, the Hitchcocks. I mean, like, think on your stuff and honestly ask yourself: is it worth it? Like, is it worth? Like, where is our line as a culture or as individuals? Because culture sucks. Like, people, groups suck. Like, we've seen that. Like, but for yourself, like, where is your line? When is enough too much? When can you separate art from artist? And I think next week, I know for myself, and I think just kind of seeing your face and watching your reaction to some of the interviews, like,
yeah,
I think next week reviewing The Birds might be the hardest review we've ever done. Because we have to talk about plot and cinematography and acting and how scary, when I've already established Hitchcock, his plots are tight. Hitchcock, his cinematography changed the game. Hitchcock, he had worked with some of the best actors and actresses of the age. How scary? Birds. Psycho, but we'll talk about that. But like... Yeah. We have to talk about that now, having the full reference and not being able to even say we were not aware of the fact that his actress who was leading this film was being pestered on set every single day to give sexual favors to her director in order to further her career. And she didn't. And at the end of the movie, her career floundered because he kept her under contract and refused to let her work for anybody else.
It's $600 a week. That's fucking crazy. I mean, I know that's like way back in the time.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have happened anyways. But even like during The Birds and stuff, she's only getting $600 a week.
We'll talk about how much the movie made at the box office too. That'll blow your mind off even more.
Did they get like...
Don't think so.
Like points or whatever the fuck it's called.
Kind of the way the contracts worked is that there was guaranteed money each week, but you were tied to them.
Because I know that was like... Obviously, I know that was like kind of spoiler. Hey, Rachel, don't listen to this part. That's the reason why we didn't see Dr. Lawrence Gordon in the Saw movies for like the longest time, because they had like a points whole fucking thing there.
It's the reason why Dave Chappelle's show was taken off of Netflix, and why he was always pissed off, why he won't work at Comedy Central, is because Comedy Central would not give him the rights to it. And when Netflix bought it, Comedy Central still owned part of the rights to it. So Chappelle wasn't seeing any of the money. So Chappelle asked Netflix to take it off. They did. Netflix went out and got the rights back, gave it to Chappelle to his own goddamn name. And now it's on Netflix again. But they did it right. They did it right by Chappelle. So good for them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Hollywood is a shithole. Like, I love films. I love cinema. I talk about watching these art house pieces and these beautiful films. But there is a rotting corpse on the inside that needs to be excised with fucking napalm. And I honestly feel that anybody attached to these people, the Harvey Weinsteins, the fucking Joss Whedons, I think anybody who has defended them or praised them or knew about it in the past need to be drug out to the center of the town square and just berated. Like, I will never be able to watch Meryl Streep in a movie again without seeing her stand up and applaud Roman Polanski for winning that award when that guy raped a little girl.
Oh, dude, I have a daughter. I don't want anything to fucking do with that guy. I would kill him.
So, that's where we're leaving it. That's my conversation. I am sorry it is less light than Trivia with Justin.
Butthole. There, is it better?
Than Trivia with Justin, but that's not me. And so that's not what we did. We're going to play a commercial from one of the member podcasts on Kaleidoscope Media Network, and we'll head on into the closing.
Ghosts, split souls, monsters, sociopathic villains, cold-blooded murders, and nightmares becoming reality. Does this sound like horror to you? Actually, these are all things that can be found in the Harry Potter series. It can be scarier than you might think. I'm Katie.
And I'm Audrey.
And in our podcast, Wizard Studies, we talk about all these parts of the wizarding world and even some more lighthearted stuff.
We can be found anywhere you listen to your podcasts and on Instagram and Facebook as Wizard Studies Podcast and Twitter as Wizard Studies.
Now back to your regularly scheduled horror talk on Here's Johnny.
The ladies over at Wizard Studies had a really interesting episode on Aunt Petunia a couple weeks back that I really enjoyed.
I'll have to listen to it. I honestly have not had time to, like,
I think Aunt Petunia is one of the more interesting side characters in Harry Potter, and I thought they did a really good job talking about her.
I know they did, like, a really shit job with her in the movie. Yes. I've heard that she's much better in the books.
Way more fleshed out. Like, there's a lot more character growth, and kind of you can understand a little bit of what's going on in the books far more than the movie. But yeah, like I mentioned several times, we're reviewing The Birds next week, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, starring Tippi Hedren.
Yeah. It'll be, it's going to be interesting.
And then I don't have it pulled up. I think after that, Silent Hill Origins.
Yes, it is with Jake.
We're reviewing it with one of the listeners of our podcast and top ranked speedrunner, Jake.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to like how you perceive a game after you've kind of become a speedrunner.
I think it's
like
a really fun discussion.
Yeah,
for sure. You're going to try to play it on stream, right?
Yes, I think so. This is Monday. I have to, according to Jake, it can be in one sitting, so yeah, I'm trying to think because
he also is a speedrunner, so he might just be trolling us.
Well, I think he's got it down to like an hour 11, I think is what I saw. Yeah, maybe an hour eight. I don't really remember
the stats over there on speedrun.com.
I am going to try to stream next. I honestly don't put a date on it right now.
We can talk about it afterwards. What are you looking to stream?
Oh, I'm going to stream Silent Hill, and if that does not work, I'll have to think of something, but I'll have something.
All right. Then I have a question.
I don't know if it'll be
you.
Horror. Yeah, what's up?
Just because I'm looking at the schedule, and we have a lot of movies coming up before we have a next game review. Okay. Do you mind doing a little bit of background every once in a while? Or if not background, maybe a 6-second plot summary? I'm putting you on the spot on the actual podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, we'll tell you what's coming up. Jaws, okay. Lake Placid, Underwater, Arachnophobia, I'll do that one. And then Godzilla vs. Kong, the new movie.
The new one? Ooh, I'll do Lake Placid.
Okay, and that'll be fun. I think Shannon will appreciate your 6-second plot summary for that, because that is her forced entry.
Oh, okay. I just know that, is Lake Placid the one with Betty White?
Yes.
Okay, that's why I picked it. you'll have to remind me.
Like, I will.
Okay.
And then I do want to say, I know this was a heavy topic. I hope I handled it with respect. And sorry to Justin for dropping the darkness on you.
It's okay. I'll just go play as a bunch of high schoolers trying to kill God or something. That's basically the end of Persona 5.
But no, like I mentioned at the end of the discussion, like I do challenge our listeners, like maybe take a moment and reevaluate and figure out for yourself what your line is and if maybe now is the time we change the line for ourselves.
Yeah.
But that's all we have this week, guys. So until next week, stay scary. The Here's Johnny podcast is brought to you by Larry and Justin. You can find the show on Twitter at Here's Johnny Cast, and you can find Larry at Beaver LA.
You can find Justin at Pickle Thing, and you can email the show at heresjohnnypodcast@gmail.com. You can look us up on Facebook at Here's Johnny Podcast.
As always, in the show notes, you can find links to the Discord and to the website. We are also on Instagram at heresjohnny_podcast.
Also in the show notes, we'll have a link to the Twitch and YouTube channels. And if you would like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/heresjohnnypodcast. Every cent goes into the show. And yeah, we just really use it to make the show better. Again, I just want to say thank you very much to our patrons. You guys help make this possible.
But yeah, Patreon is the way we support the show. We are looking to get rich. And like Justin said, every dollar, every cent, it all goes back in. There's some pretty cool tiers. So head on and look at that.
But until next week, see you guys later.